Garden State Debate, where the talk is real. Garden State Debate, no joke, no frills. Garden State Debate, it's the talk of the town. Garden State Debate, for people all around, yeah. Garden State Debate,
Garden State Debate.
All right, State welcome Debate. Back, everyone, to another episode of Garden State Debate. I'm Ryan, and with me today, I have two special guests, Senator Loretta Weinberg and Assemblyman Gordon Johnson of the New Jersey State Legislature, representing the 37th District, both very tenured public servants in the legislature dating back to early 2000s. If you didn't catch the first episode with Senator Weinberg, that was done in, we did that in late, the final episode of our quote unquote first season in 2020 in December. And a lot has transpired since then. So with that, also I noticed recently an insider, NJ published a top 100 policymakers of 2021, and they listed Senator Weinberg is number one. So congratulations, Senator Weinberg, on that. Congratulations to Assemblyman Johnson on the primary win, and looking forward to the senator seat as Senator Weinberg is set to retire at the end of the year. So just with that, I'd like to welcome both of you to the show. How are you guys doing today? How have you been holding up over the last few months? And I guess we'll start with ladies first. Senator Weinberg, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you, Ryan. And surviving as we try to deal with the myriad of issues facing our state, from everything from the most important COVID on down to transportation, taxes, budget issues. But I'm delighted to be here with Assemblyman Johnson. Chances are he's going to be replacing me in the state Senate, since this is a very Democratic district. I think the smart money is that Gordon Johnson will be elected along with his Assembly running mates, Shama Hader and Ellen Park. And it's really somewhat of a momentous occasion. Take me out of the equation momentarily. Gordon will be the first African-American senator from this district. Shama Hader will be the first Muslim-American woman elected to the state legislature. And Ellen Park will be I think the first Korean American woman elected from our district. So in terms of diversity, it is already very noteworthy, the trio that won the primary here in New Jersey. And I'd just like to add a couple of other things. Gordon and I have shared offices for the last 10 years, I guess, or longer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our staffs have worked together. They've been intertwined in many mm-hmm. issues. And though, because of my interest and work on issues around women's issues, most particularly sexual harassment, as well as issues around New Jersey Transit, I guess I've gotten a larger part of the spotlight, but it was, you know, I would go up the hallway to Gordon Johnson's office if I needed expertise on law enforcement issues or on issues around alternate energy. So he developed his own expertise in a series of issues that was somewhat different than that, but equally important. So I am hoping, as he knows, I say, when McKinney told Gordon on many an occasion, I'm leaving a lot of notes for him in the middle desk drawer. So Hopefully he will pick up the mantle in other areas, particularly around NJ Transit. It's an issue that affects so many people that we represent right here in District 37, as well as an economic engine for the state of New Jersey. So I am delighted that these three people will become the new District 37 legislative team. And I have full confidence that people won't be disappointed.
Very good. That's quite a handoff and tribute to the Assemblyman. So from there, kick it over to Assemblyman Johnson, who I just met for the first time today. And to your point about people may not outside of the district who see, you know, Senator Weinberg in the media may not have that that natural connection in their minds or just from a visibility perspective of the tenure and how long you two have been together and working so closely together. So it's a pleasure to have you on, Assemblyman Johnson. And I'd just like to welcome you and also get your take on how things are going and your current status and that likely and hopefulness of moving into that senator spot and what you're looking forward to in those regards.
Yeah, I could just say ditto and can move on from there. But I
won't. Right? She already said it all. We got a lot of questions, so that's not the worst.
That's okay. You know, I've been involved, and you know, I kind of fell into these areas that I have an interest in now, such as green energy, or with the offshore wind project, and with now I'm trying to incentivize the car industry to bring hydrogen fuel cell vehicles to the East Coast. They're in California now, set up the infrastructure for that over here in New Jersey, and whatever else we have to do to have them, to make them or cause them to bring these hydrogen fuel cell cars, which are electric cars, basically, the car their own fuel source, and to bring that to the East Coast. So I'm big on that now. Of course, we still have social issues, social justice issues that continue. And that covers the whole spectrum of housing, education, access to healthcare, and other parts of, and of course, the law enforcement or public safety side. So we're still involved in that. And as for New Jersey Transit, I feel very fortunate. I am fortunate. I'm lucky. I've had a about an 18-year apprenticeship program under Loretta Weinberg. So back in the olden days, after you're an apprentice, you became a master of your trade. So I think maybe after 18 years of being under her, I could probably take it from there and go forward and hopefully make her proud of what I've done, what I'm doing as she leaves. So as for New Jersey Transit, I think I read in today's paper, Loretta, that they're putting in a line from out to Pennsylvania now or through to Sussex County.
That's what I read in the paper today. So,
yeah. So, and they've been talking about that for about maybe 20 years ever since I've been in the assembly. But it looks like the first step towards that is happening now, where they're going to bring rail service to the Northwest New Jersey on these tracks. So, of course, we in the 37th district, and particularly on the east side of the 37th district, are still waiting for the Hudson Bergen Light Rail to get to our county. So we are hoping that this some of this funding that's been set aside will be used to get that going. I think we're waiting for the FRA to release a report that was sent in to them. So we'll be staying on top of New Jersey Transit and to ensure that the employees and the riders get the treatment that they deserve.
Excellent. Thank you for that.
Also, and continuing, you know, veterans, of course, I'm involved in Veterans Affairs. I'm a veteran, so I still have a spot in my heart for veterans. So I'm involved with Veteran Affairs in the state, the veterans that served served their country in this state. So I'm also involved in that too.
Yeah. Yeah. I was looking through your the legislative profile and I saw the military background. Sheriff of Bergen County for a couple of years there in the beginning of around 2001. And also look through some of the bills that you're sponsoring, including a lot on the fuel cell and some of the clean energy stuff that you mentioned. And it was interesting because I saw a lot of that, and then I saw other things on law enforcement and things related to that as well. So maybe as we get down, go down the path here, we'll hear a little bit more specifics. If we just start, and there are some specific questions that, you know, I reached out to folks to see if they have questions for you guys. So we can get to them, and some of them will be on New Jersey Transit and diversity and women's rights and things like that. So we'll get to that in a few minutes. But some overarching themes of flying by, some things that are literally just coming up or have been over the last couple of months or days, I'd like to point out. We left off Senator Weinberg talking about you were concerned about educational opportunities for children in relation to, and these questions are obviously for both of you, so feel free to chime in or as needed. Your concerns were related to the pandemic and how it's impacting children and schools and the digital divide and Wi-Fi access. And you also mentioned healthcare access as well during that time. And we were both looking forward to the moving from unprecedented times to normal precedented times. And right, exactly. We have the Delta variant of COVID still circulating. I mean, it feels like there's going to be some sort of the COVID's going to be around in some capacity for a while. So what are either of your thoughts or both on somebody, and you know, New Jersey's doing a great job in terms of vaccines and all of that stuff, but how do you still have those same concerns on education this year, on healthcare, and what are your concerns related to that?
And, you know, we expressed concerns early on not knowing what was happening to our children educationally. And I think all reports since then, as a few cursory studies have emerged, is that children from disadvantaged backgrounds have suffered mightily in lost education opportunities. Part of it is access to Wi-Fi, the great digital divide, and part of it is also having a parent at home who has the time and the ability to supervise the child when you're dealing with education over the internet rather than in person. So very often the mom was at work and there was no parent at home to make sure that the child was sitting in front of the screen, and particularly when you come down to very young children who need that kind of supervision. This is something that the new legislature, and I know Gordon will be involved in,
yeah,
going to have to figure out how to make it up to these kids who have lost so many opportunities. Certainly pointed out, access to healthcare is not equal opportunity in our state. COVID pointed that out. Not that we didn't know it before. In fact, tomorrow we're at a press conference and dealing with a group who have been pushing nationally for more affordable prescriptions so that people don't have to choose between paying their rent and buying a pharmaceutical product that they need. So these are going to be big, big issues in the next legislature and in the remaining portion of this, because kids are going to need a lot of help to catch up. And then hopefully, if we can get through the next school year in person, make sure families are vaccinated, masks are in place, and that they're not political footballs, but they're about good healthcare.
I'll add to that by saying that, the term or definition of access to quality education has been changed now. And as the senator brought up before, the digital divide really came out that as it is in the state of New Jersey, where in the more rural areas and urban areas, that you have that digital divide. And we were talking about possibly in the more rural areas, somehow getting the libraries involved in these towns, where they can become like hotspots themselves, or they could issue these little hotspots or something where there's young access to the internet, which is so important. So that idea was kicked around for a while. It's still probably being discussed now, but we need the way to eliminate or to allow these individuals in these areas who are less fortunate, who have access to the internet. That's so important. As for the schools, vaccinations, I believe, are very, very important. Wearing a mask, I think masks will be coming back to our state again, the way it looks with the Delta variant. But wearing a mask, it should not be a problem for the public. In school, it would be, I guess, it may be a problem there for the young children, but that's something that we have to put up with. But as long as we adults in the legislature and also those residents here who are parents and just residents in general, respect this very dangerous virus and do what and follow the rules or guidelines set forth by those folks who know what's going on, our scientists and our medical professionals. We'll get through this. We should get through this. I was small example. I was at a funeral home the other day in Inglewood. A friend of mine dropping off some paperwork. That was actually a resolution, but dropping off some paperwork. And the young man came out and told me, listen, Gordon, you got to get the word out to the people. I have 8 bodies in my funeral home. They all died from COVID. They're all in their 30s and 40s. And they live here in Inglewood, New Jersey. They caught COVID outside the state. You all traveled to Texas or Florida. You got sick down there and passed down there. And they shipped their bodies back to Inglewood. So you got, it's very serious. And being on that note, I put it on my social medias that this is a very, very dangerous and definite problem that we have to get through. And we have to pay attention to the advice that's being given to us.
Yeah, thank you for that. And just a quick question, follow up on that, and we can move on. Do you guys have an opinion on vaccine mandates? I talk to people, friends and family and whatnot. In the private sector, there are plenty already of vaccine mandates at work locations in New York City, New Jersey. Do you foresee that will become something just a widespread, I don't know if it's national or if it's New Jersey, is it going to become a public and private necessity? And if it's not a clear yes or no, then that's fine. But some people have a strong opinion on it one way or another. And like I just said, it's already happening where private companies want it to be done. So just want to throw that out there.
Private sector can make their rules and regulations. I mean, they're private sector.
Absolutely.
So a company, then you have to follow their rules. If they say you get a vaccination, then you get one. Or if you don't have a good excuse not to get one, then it falls into one of their exceptions. And of course, that's up to them. Public sector, do I feel vaccinations should be mandatory? In some cases, I'll say yes. And I think it's going to come down to that. We had it for measles. We have it for other diseases that came up during the years. And it was mandatory. So can the schools mandate or make it mandatory for a vaccination? I think the school district probably can, but we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, I agree. We already have vaccine mandates. You can't register your child in school unless they've had some series of mandated shots. It's not about personal freedom. You have the personal freedom to say no. And then I have the personal freedom to follow the law that your child can't come into school and infect my child. So where your personal freedom ends at the tip of your nose is when it will affect the health of others. So we have vaccine mandates. I foresee a day when the COVID vaccine might join that list.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And like you, like Gordon mentioned, as things continue to develop, obviously they're not even available for children under the age of 12. So we're kind of in this middle ground of vaccine even eligibility. So kind of
right.
Puts things into a little bit of a harder perspective. Also the,
well, we're very fortunate in this country because we have a very strong pharmaceutical research sector in the state of New Jersey and in this country. So I would suspect shortly they'll have a vaccine, or they would have tested a vaccine that could be used by children under the age of 12. It's a matter of getting the research out, what have you. It's not like we're in, and then some, and keep in mind, in some countries, they don't have the vaccine at all. In some countries, all right? We're very fortunate in the United States, and I guess in the EU countries, they have the means and the ability to manufacture, do the research, do the testing, and then put out a product that's safe and also is effective. So I think you'll see that in this country, you'll see a vaccine that'll be safe for children under 12 to use. Just a matter of time.
Very good. Okay, let's move on to another very recent topic, just to get your quick take on it. The Governor Cuomo, finishing out his last couple of weeks here, resigned, sexual harassment allegations from the attorney general over there. What are your thoughts on it? And also, do you have any knowledge of Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul? And the reason why I'm bringing this up, because it's a neighboring state, we work closely together. There's a lot of interaction in what we do, whether it be business, transit, you name it. And there's a lot of similarities in the way that we go about things, such as even through COVID. So, the replacement of Governor Cuomo could have it, for one way or another, a big impact as well on New Jersey and your, and on the legislature doing business or with politics as it relates to the New Jersey, New York connection. So what's your take on the overall Cuomo situation? And then also on kind of the shift in what it might bring to bring forth for New York and New Jersey's relationship.
I think Cuomo did the right thing by resigning. He might have done it a little earlier, saved himself and the rest of us some agita. I think his excuse, he didn't realize that he had stepped over the, quote, over the line, because the line had been redrawn. It's a little bit sad to hear from a 63-year-old man who had been a longtime governor of the state of New Jersey, had served as an attorney general, and had served in a presidential cabinet. And so it's not only, it's good that there will be less distracted leadership in the state of New York, but also in terms of the tri-state area. As you pointed out, Ryan, we particularly New Jersey and New York are interdependent in so many ways. Port Authority, how funds get spent or allocated to each of the two states, the airports that jointly affect both New York and New Jersey. So many things that our governor worked with Governor Cuomo on, things like open air dining and mask requirements because, again, we were so interdependent. So I, for one, I'm glad we've got new leadership there. I don't know a lot about the Lieutenant Governor Hochul, kind of read a little bit about her the last few days. And I saw kind of an interesting TV on MSNBC the other night, Rachel Maddow traced this whole lineage of how she, how the Lieutenant Governor got there, which—
Oh, that too, actually.
Yeah, was all on the backs of men behaving badly. Yeah. It was kind of interesting.
On both sides of the political spectrum.
Both sides.
So the same show that you're talking about.
He replaced a congressman who had to resign because of bad behavior. She lost that seat after one term. Then the whole issue of the governor of New York having to step down, and then Basil Patterson replacing him as lieutenant governor. And then he got into his own issues and so on. So it's kind of interesting. There must have been 6 or 8 men in her trail that she had nothing to do with, all of whom behaved badly, and she came for it. So I think she, from what I've read, she seems well prepared to move into that seat, which a lieutenant governor should be well prepared to do. And nobody has questioned her integrity. So I think she hopefully is the right person at the right time, and that the leadership of the great state of New York that is so important to how we function in New Jersey, that the leadership will all work together, both sides of the aisle, to try to bring the state back together again.
I will say to that, I met briefly with Eric Adams earlier this week. And the first thing he said to me was, he wants to see how we, the state of New Jersey, handles this cannabis industry that's being rolled out in New Jersey. First thing he said to me, we want to see how you do it. We want lessons learned. You want to, and it shows how close New York and New Jersey are when it comes to, even though we're different states, but the different situation, different industries and issues affect both of us. And then going back again to New Jersey Transit. So how important that is on a bi-state coordination and collaboration. So I don't know that much about Lieutenant Governor Hochul. Of course, she's from the Buffalo area. It seems to me from what I read that she's qualified for the position for sure. She's been in government for a long time. And I think the relationship between Lieutenant Governor, or well, maybe by then it'll be Governor Hochul, and Governor Murphy will be a good match, a good combination. So, but we have to wait and see. But I think they work well together.
Very good. And thanks for sharing about that meeting with the new mayor of New York City. So there's, I didn't even think about that in terms of both Lieutenant Governor, soon to be Governor Hochul, and the new mayor there, Eric Adams. So that's a good point to see how that relationship and how that story unfolds. I've seen the same thing. I'm like I told you guys before the show, I'm originally from Buffalo. I know a little bit about Lieutenant Governor, but I'm very excited. I know the Buffalo area and upstate New York in general, right? Who seems to feel left out sometimes from the downstate action, and where Governor Cuomo spent a lot of his time. But in order to be Lieutenant Governor of a whole state, you got to be in the whole state. So someone that understands the different needs of the state, I think that will provide a whole different outlook too. So interested to see that. And just like we were talking about at the beginning of the show, Assemblyman Johnson's very diverse colleagues that will be joining him. She'll be the first female governor of the state of New York. So,
New York. Mm-hmm.
So So that's great to see as well. And as you both said, with merit, not just a fun fact. So it's great to see. And just a follow-up question for you, Senator Weinberg, on the Katie Brennan laws that we, you know, as a result of the Katie Brennan situation, we spoke about it last time. And it kind of does relate to the Cuomo situation in terms of redrawing the lines. I believe that there's some things in the New Jersey legislature as it relates to some of these softer harassment types of situations that would fall, you know, I'm not talking about our governor specifically, but would that we don't have that New York does. Is that something that you're working on?
Yes, the we have passed a very comprehensive series of bills that came out of the Katie Brennan joint legislative oversight hearings, that came out of the kind of informal women's group that I helped form a few months back. And they passed through the legislature with not too much trouble, and the governor signed them all. We have two outstanding bills that came out of the Senate very late in the session before we adjourned, and they're both awaiting action in the assembly right now. And hopefully that will be done in lame duck, because they're two important bills. One sets up a process for state employees and to make sure that if anybody is victimized by sexual harassment, or if the environment is not conducive to feeling safe, that there are processes that women, or if need be, men, can go to that are safe and accountable and, where necessary, transparent. So the two bills that are left, as I say, one sets up a process for state employees, and the other sets up a process for campaigns, which is very, very important. Unfortunately, that won't be ready for the upcoming campaign, upcoming gubernatorial campaign, but will be hopefully for future campaigns. And that sets up a process in the election law the Election Law Enforcement Commission, which exists, which today has oversight of campaigns in terms of campaign finance. It appropriates money so that they can get the necessary expertise. And I'm hoping with Assemblyman Johnson's help that both those bills will get passed in lame duck. They're the last two big pieces of this whole series of bills, and I think very important pieces. And I just like to point out, because I've gotten lots of questions about, isn't New Jersey similar to New York in many ways? Let's start out with the fact that we don't have a governor who has been, or anybody suspects, has been a sexual harasser in any way, shape, or form. So the big difference to point out is that Governor Cuomo himself has been, there have been allegations about his own behavior. That is not true in New Jersey, but certainly in the environment around gubernatorial offices generally and campaigns generally are important, that we make sure that anybody who wants to come forth can do so in a safe environment and not be subject to retaliation. So once we get those last two bills passed and the governor signs them, I think New Jersey will again be in the forefront of what needs to be done to improve the environment.
Got it. Thanks
for that. And we have to keep in mind that, as I remember it, when they had this whole thing with the Katie Brennan allegations and what have you, they we're told that there are rules and regulations in state government and a process in place to report this, but these are not state government employees. They're working for a campaign, so they're outside the state government. And that is why this the second piece of this, the second legislation, the second bill is so important, because they need some oversight and a process where a person can report the behavior of other fellow employees in campaigns. And putting it under the Election Law Enforcement Commission, I think it would be the proper place to put that, because that's their job. That's what they do. They oversee campaigns. And the process for state employees, of course, where a person can report an issue without the fear of retaliation is also important. So I'm on it.
Great.
I support it.
Sounds good.
That was for my mentor, by the way.
Sounds like you had a good mentor. Just because, you know, this show is not a political show or anything like that, as we were talking before, although we include politics and entertainment and medical and things like that. When we refer to the lame duck period, what are we talking about? A slow time in the summer where the legislature is not convening, for what period of time? Can you kind of put that in perspective just for the listeners? Bills can still get passed during it, but, you know, like, how would you explain it to someone who's not your colleague? That
when the legislative calendar, we are always in session in one respect. We don't go out of session as some states do for a specific period of time. We do go into recess. Usually when it's an election year for the whole legislature, we will very often go into recess after the budget is adopted on July 1st or by July 1st. And that's what we're doing right now. We're in the recess period. We will resume after the election in November. During the months of November and December, there will be legislative sessions, which are commonly known as lame duck legislative sessions, because they are at the end of the period of time of that legislative session. And then the new legislature takes over in mid-January of 2022. So we are in the recess period. We will resume in November and December. You will see legislation passed in what is commonly known as lame duck. At that point, in that point of time, I will still be the state senator and Gordon will still be the assemblyman. And we will hopefully jointly push for some bills that have been left unattended or not passed by one house or the other to try to get them passed into the governor's desk.
Thank you for that. That's helpful. And also another thing that came out, I think just today, I haven't had a chance to really look at it, but the census, right? The census was produced for this country today. So we know I don't have the numbers in front of me, like I said, and you may not either, but that has an impact on politics. Has an impact, obviously, on our population. It is our population. But also redistricting, right? So is the census, do you guys have any opinion on what you take away from the census, which just came out today? And also as it relates to redistricting. And is that something that from a legislative perspective is important to you?
I'm not too concerned with the 37th district so much. I have not seen the numbers either. I have not seen the new numbers. After we conclude this program, I will go online and see if I could find the numbers for the 37th. But I'm not too concerned with the 37th district. I don't think we lost any people here. I think we probably picked up population, if anything, in this area. and Loretta, who want to see him in construction in Hackensack and in Englewood, these apartments in Fort Lee. I think we're probably double our population the way it looks. That's a bad job, but it's definitely an increase, I think, in population.
I don't know what the numbers are either. The only thing I saw in the press so far is Newark beat Jersey City to stay as the number.
Did.
I saw that.
Somebody seemed to have set that up as a competition, which I'm not sure actually exists. But
the mayor of Jersey City made that comment years ago.
And redistricting does affect all of us. It will affect who our congressperson is, what congressional district we end up in as an individual community. And of course, redistricting will be done on a legislative basis also. So I tend to agree with Gordon that you probably won't see too many changes in District 37, but you could see changes. So we'll have to wait and see. We've got the numbers have just been received. The State Redistricting Commission has not named its tiebreaker yet. So this one person still to be appointed there. The Congressional Redistricting, the court named former Supreme Court Justice Wallace as the tiebreaker, the New Jersey Supreme Court. And we'll wait and see what happens with the State Redistricting Commission.
And when typically would that take place? Like by the end of the year, or do we know?
Well, they won't be finished by the end of the year, but I'm sure the commission will be named and starting to do their work.
Got it. Yeah, similar to your point.
But don't forget, this is a two-year legislature. So that by the next election, 2 years from November,
that's when they need a finalist.
People will run from whatever the new districts are.
We're running in different districts here.
Got it.
Well, not districts, but revised districts, I should say.
Right. Okay. And I didn't see anything except for the thing that you mentioned about Trenton and also Jersey City. And I think Patterson already was, but the two of the three most densest cities in the country. Jersey City jumped up to number two, and the first being New York City. So I thought, and we all hear regularly, we're the densest state in the country. But interesting to see that, but not surprisingly, that two of the three most densest cities in the country are in New Jersey. So moving along to just something that has happened over the last year, just a quick one for you guys. A lot of your meetings have and passing of bills and public testimony has taken place in this type of setting, right? Virtually. I think did you find it as more accessible to yourselves and colleagues as well as the public? And do you think there's anything in the acceleration of technology in government that will stick and be embedded in the future? Or will people going forward, or the old norm of marching down to Trenton if you want to make a comment on New Jersey Transit Reform Bill 2 or whatever the bill may be? Or do you foresee technology and virtual interaction driving some change from a state government or any level of government, New Jersey or beyond? Any thoughts on that?
It's both things. Some things lent themselves and do lend themselves to being much more efficient on Zoom. That there are many groups that are of, below a certain number, where you can do a good Zoom meeting and people don't have to travel to Trenton or Newark or any other place. So that was, I hopefully that portion of technology will be continued. Trying to do a Zoom meeting of the legislature was painful, twice as painful in the assembly as it was in the Senate, because you have to go through a roll call vote for every single issue.
Right.
On the floor of the legislature, you push your button and it automatically tallies. So they have to call. I mean, it was bad enough in the Senate. I can imagine with the Assembly where they had to call 80 names. Yeah. Somebody always has to be reminded to unmute. Somebody else is away from his screen. Right. So very inefficient. That portion is inefficient. And I think the interchange that we have with each other, particularly if you're debating an issue, is important.
How about from a public access?
A lot of local municipalities are complaining because with Zoom, too many members of the public are chiming in on issues, which kind of amuses me that a local elected officials find that very distressing because it's easier for somebody to give input if that somebody doesn't have to get dressed, get into a car and drive down and sit and wait at an in-person municipal meeting. So a lot of local municipalities don't like this at all because it has tended to produce more public input. So I think in local municipalities where you're dealing with a finite number, you can do a combination of both, of in-person and then after everybody who's gotten up in person, open it up to Zoom for anybody else who wants to testify. So I hope we keep what I consider the better part of the technology, and hopefully it'll be safe enough to go back to the less where it's not been efficient and let us have real interchange.
Understood. Anything to add, Assemblyman?
I'll say that, because of COVID, we've relied more on technology now and that's available to us. I could see Zoom type calls for committee meetings, possibly. Voting session is definitely not going to work for us. Voting session, we want to have be able to debate our colleagues and discuss things in a room face to face, as opposed to being over a Zoom screen or a telephone. So, committee meetings could possibly work with a combination of in-person and also people calling in via the internet.
Makes sense. And just last point on that is, people usually know who they're, they may not, who they're what district they're in. I bet you actually most people don't know what district they're in if you went up to the average person in New Jersey. So this whole engagement that's come out during the pandemic related to the accessibility thing that the senator brought up, not just technology wise, but do you think there's a need to, there's nowhere you can go except for the legislative website that I'm aware of, where you can see a list of all the bills that are in the works. The timelines are hard to tell. They're buried very deep. So unless I were to ask you, Senator Weinberg or Assemblyman Johnson, what are the three most burning ones? Or unless they made the headline of, one of our two major papers, Bergen Record or the Star Ledger, how does someone become informed about what's going on with the work that you're doing when it could be so impactful to the state, to your constituents? And is there any other ways outside of technology where government can come to people, at least in relation to if it's for a certain project that relates to where people are, and they probably won't show up to Trenton to weigh in. So is there any take on finding the people, your constituents, where they are, or is that already part of the way that you foresee, productive government at any level? Sorry, it's a long.
In the 37th district, we rely on social media to get the word out as to what we're doing, issues that are we're working on that may be important to our people, to communicate with our constituents to see what's important to them, and then to articulate that down in Trenton in some way. The use of social media as a vehicle to reach the our populace is very important, and that's going to continue in the 37th district because it works very well, I think. Also, following Loretta Weinberg, she's called meetings back to Jersey Transit again. She's had town hall meetings several times in district, and having the people, the residents of 37th district, speak directly to the personnel from Jersey Transit, telling them how bad their service was, because no one said it was good, how bad the service was, how it impacted their lives, and how they need to make improvements there. So when you reach out and have town hall meetings, when you use the social media via the internet, and also we still use the old fashioned way, maybe a letter. Remember those days, a letter with a stamp on it? So sometimes we still use that every now.
So it's a mix. Yeah, it sounds like a mixed bag of some of the classic legacy forms of communication combined with the newer social media.
It's about marketing and advertising. It's like that's what America's all about. You know, it's about advertising and marketing. Like, get the word out there as to what you're doing. People want to know what you're doing. And that's part.
Very good. Moving on to a couple quick ones because maybe we got hopefully another 20 minutes or so. Infrastructure bill just happened, right? It's going to the House and then to the president. New Jersey's getting something like $12 billion, bridges, roads, and transit. Any thoughts on that? And then a follow-up question is, and will the legislature, it's already kind of appropriated for those things, but does the state legislature have any involvement at some point once that money is appropriated to New Jersey? And is that follow-up question? Actually, I'll just start with that because that's kind of a big one.
Yeah, well, let me just say that you talk about being the right person in the right place at the right time. That's what Joe Biden is. Man, he's almost a miracle worker. What he's accomplished in the first, 7 months of his term, and seeing this beside the issues around COVID, but seeing this infrastructure bill painfully moving through, but each step getting through. New Jersey, we will find out once the bill is finally adopted and signed into law, we'll find out what New Jersey gets, but we seem to be an important part because we're an important part of the transportation network of the country. And I think the legislature will be involved in how that money is appropriated as we move along. So I don't know if people fully realize what this president has accomplished in this length of time, but however the moon and the stars lined up, we're lucky to have him right now.
Yeah, moving from handling COVID on its own and getting large items through is no right. for anyone.
Climate change. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is really a big deal. It's something that Gordon has been involved in, really. And the work that he's doing to really take this on is mind-boggling.
Right, and we saw the IPCC report come out, another really recent thing about climate change and the very kind of devastating conclusions of it. And I just want to ask you guys another question, which is not in the infrastructure bill, but it's infrastructure related. Well, it is, but not for New Jersey, as from what I can tell. And that's related to utilities, power. And I know New Jersey has a big, spending and looking a lot at renewable energies and solar and Assemblyman, we were talking about the fuel cell and a lot of the stuff you're working on. You might want to talk a little bit about that. But also, I wanted to ask you about just power to our homes. And, just in July alone, in my area, we had probably 10 days of power outages So lost productivity from a personal working at home, company perspective, health, children, senior. So what's your take? It's a good one probably for you, Assemblyman, on our infrastructure. I'm in the JCP&L territory. You know, I can't switch power like I can switch my cable company. So what is your take on that? Are you concerned about it? And then maybe you can talk a little bit about the other fuel cell and other initiatives you're working on.
Well, yes, of course, that's a major concern. Energy it runs America. You know, it runs people's lives. It's a part of us. To ensure that we have enough energy and we can rely on it coming into our homes or offices or our factories is a very important part of what we call our industrial sector. And also on the local side, municipal side, and on the private side. So it keeps business going and it keeps people's lives going. It's also a part of a quality of life. It's a quality of life issue for people. So the energy or access, I guess I shouldn't say access to energy, but to ensure that there's enough energy there to power our homes and our businesses and the industrial sector is very important. I know that JCP&L has had some issues in the past, they've been called out on it in the past. And I think because of that pressure, they are improving what they do, improving their service. But, I wasn't in Japan, but I was reading a story about in Japan where they have these, I'm promoting hydrogen fuel cell cars again now. And in Japan, they build homes now, some homes are built where there's a power outage, you can plug your car into your house and power your house from your hydrogen fuel cell car because it's a generator basically. So and it gives you enough energy for 2 or 3 days in a home, a residence. So little things like that could help. As you know, people here are buying generators by the thousands because they want these backup generators there when the power goes out. Energy is a priority. That's all I can say.
Right. And similar to in a different way, but similar to NJ Transit, like because it's such a big component of New Jersey, we don't have many other options. When it comes to power, we have wherever we live, we have our power utility. So, the power goes out or the train doesn't come, people go running to their mayors and state legislators and asking, what can we do? And I know people are looking, advocating for burying power lines where there's tree prone areas, looking at microgrids and things like that. So and I know in other states like Florida, the legislature actually put mandates in terms of like burying power lines. So I didn't know if anything like that is on top of the mind. But to your point, it sounds like in general, the concern about
it has to be addressed. I'm not so sure burying power lines throughout the whole network is the answer. But the utilities have to figure out how they could best provide this service at a cost that they can afford, that we can afford, we ratepayers can afford.
Right.
So burying power lines is also requires maintenance too, that we maintain underground. So it's not the end all of this issue. So I'll go with, we have to be on top of that and ensure that our utilities through the BPU, through their oversight, are doing the best they can to serve the ratepayers of the state of New Jersey.
Agreed. Okay. So I know we're running out of time. So last subject, and we talked about it a couple times already, so maybe we can make it quick. We'll do New Jersey Transit. Senator Weinberg's favorite and probably yours too, Assemblyman Johnson. So just some recent events, right? We had six alleged sexual assault or harassment cases. We've seen a insurance fraud of a board member who has since resigned. So if we go back to Senator's first reform bill, which appears to be a suggestion at this point in time, out of the 13 board members that were required, there's now 9. Most of them are either de facto from the governor or appointed by the governor. And senators put forth a transit reform bill, another one to close the gaps on the first one, which there was still gaps in actually completing. So there seems to be a disconnect between what the Senate, what the legislature is trying to do with the board, and what the governor views in his most recent comments, even saying that commuters don't care who's on the board, they just want their trains to come. Well, I agree that trains and people want their trains and buses to come, but the senator, don't want to speak for you, but you're putting these bills out so that you can put more accountability into the system so that trains and buses do come. And I can cite some more of these types of things that we've just seen in the last week, but clearly the oversight and the shakeup or whatever you want to call it is not, in my opinion, it's not being done. And I think you'd probably agree. I've seen some of your comments in the headlines as well. So, and even in this Assemblyman McKeon's response about the bill was something along the lines of people don't care about the board members, the governor.
Yeah, basically, but, you know what? That really annoys me. Yeah, people don't care if you stop the average resident of New Jersey or the average commuter and ask them if they care how many members are on the NJ Transit Board, they're going to say no. But what they do care about is the work that the NJ Transit Board does and the outgrowth of that work. So let's not minimize what the legislature and the governor signed in creating this new NJ Transit Board, which was supposed to be much more accountable and transparent. We saw over the last number of months, large gaps, our own fault, that we needed to close up in the legislature. And that's what the New Jersey Transit Reform 2.0 is designed to do. And hopefully I got that amended before we went into recess. Hopefully that will be a very important bill that we take up in lame duck. But getting back to what's going on now, we did pass a good law and it's not being followed. We have four openings on the NJ Transit Board, two of them from unions, and the other two never nominated by the governor's office. So it would be helpful if we had a full complement there. There was no reason in the world to leave those two openings that are awaiting nomination by the governor for the last 2 years. So I know the governor is devoted to improving NJ Transit, and I hope he will help us get that last bit passed and signed into law quickly. But right now we need a full board. We need full transparency. We need a passenger advocate that was designed into the original bill and then was kind of undermined by having that position report directly to the bureaucracy rather than to the board. So in terms of Reform 2.0, it will be up to the board to hire that person, and that person will report to the board. So when people come before public bodies like NJ Transit Board and complain and give them real life stories about what's going wrong, there will be somebody there to help be their advocate. Why that position has been left open all these months has also never been explained. So, I don't like to criticize people in my own party, but when necessary, I'm not going to be hesitant to do it. And I think the governor has all the right instincts. And I hope he gets back involved with improving NJ Transit.
Again,
and if not, I will be nagging Gordon Johnson on a regular basis.
Yeah, I was just going to say,
I'll follow up on that. Yes.
Yeah, I'll let you follow. And I just a lot of comments that came in to you guys when I reached out was, and you already kind of alluded to it, Assemblyman, is will Gordon Johnson take over that, the big shoes of Senator Weinberg, who's called into board meetings, who's always, you know, working behind the scenes with the governor or trying to, and passing legislation. People are legitimately concerned about the lack of voice if it's left, if it's not filled by anyone. I know it's supposed to be with the board, as the senator said, but people are naturally concerned. So, sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
That's okay. The people of the 37th district will have an advocate at the board meetings when things aren't going right. I believe our governor, Governor Murphy, understands mass transit. I mean, he was stationed in Germany for a number of years as the ambassador. Of course, as we know in Europe uses mass transit much more than we do. Their infrastructure is built around mass transit. So he understands the importance of this and understands the how people's lives are affected by this and how it could be better and made better. So I will be there as an advocate for the people of 37th District, and not just 37th, but Bergen County and New Jersey, because it affects everyone in New Jersey. So, I mean, Jersey Transit goes from all the way down to Cape May. So,
okay, to your audience, Ryan, you've all heard it here first. And that little clip of Gordon Johnson promising to be a voice for New Jersey commuters is forever embedded in social media.
Yes, there you go.
There we go. It's crystallized. Congratulations.
Memorialized forever.
All that no one in the legislature wants, but everyone in New Jersey wants it to be an advocate to be there. That's what it appears to be. Yes. Because from what I see, people don't like to engage in things that are complex and hard to fix, but it's still probably worth fighting for if the outcomes right now are so,
Well, how many legislators use mass transit? You know, that's the other question.
This is what the public likes to talk about. How many board members use it? How many legislators are on it? You know, what if the governor had to use it? Then would it be running a little bit better? So those are all great questions. One last one on that. The New Jersey New Jersey Transit Legislative Oversight Committee, I don't know if I got those words wrong. You guys, I think, were both on it. It ran for several years. It brought a lot to the surface. It probably kind of led to some of these. I think there was supposed to be a report from it that never really was produced and got cut when COVID started. And I think it was supposed to be replaced by the reform bills. But we arguably are no better or not much better than we were before. So is there any potential? Why did those stop? I mean, I guess it would probably be because of COVID. I think you told us that last time. Loretta, but it combined with the reform bill. But is there anything that could come back to put accountability back into New Jersey Transit from the legislature?
Well, that's what the board is supposed to be doing.
That's what I figured.
The legislature can't run New Jersey Transit. I've said this from the very beginning. That's well above my pay grade, and it's well above the pay grade of the other 119 legislators that represent us. That is the point, to create an open, transparent, accountable board to run this very complex bureaucracy that affects so many residents in the state of New Jersey. So I've resisted this each time. We're not equipped to run New Jersey Transit. I can't tell you whether we should be using articulated buses or buses with two entrances or exits and so on. All we can do is create the appropriate atmosphere and the appropriate governing body. And that's the object of all of this. And I wish more people in the administration would embrace that, because pretty simple. And if we can get this second portion event of the reform passed, and we've got the beginnings of a good board, some of whom were appointed by the governor. People like Bob Gordon and Cedric Fulton and James Adams, I mean, they've really risen to the occasion, I think. They have the background, they have the expertise, and just so give them the full board and give them the right to oversee what's going on there without being undermined, and NJ Transit will improve with resources, of course.
Yeah, the proper resources in at that vision, at the after, where you want to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now, right? Providing the service to New Jersey. Capital expenditures and versus operating expenses, all that good stuff. These members have to understand that, and they do, and they need to be able to articulate that to the public and show the public that things can get better and will get better.
Yeah, no, sounds good. I appreciate your guys' time. Thank you, Senator Weinberg and Assemblyman Johnson, for coming back on. Some of these extended sessions, they take a little longer than 5 minute quote for like regular media, but hopefully people get a better understanding of who you are, what you're advocating for, what's on the latest. There's so many other things like cannabis that we kind of briefly talked about. I wanted to talk about like affordable housing, cannabis, all these different things, but we'll save it for next time. Maybe we'll do one with Assemblyman, soon to be Senator Johnson, on some subjects like that. But thank you again for coming on. I really appreciate it. And I know the listeners will too. So thank you, and enjoy the rest of your summer, and see what we can get through in the lame duck, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, take care, Ryan.
The talk is real.
Okay, thank you.
No joke, no frills. God in state debate is the talk of the town. God in state debate. People all around, yeah. God in state debate. God in state debate. God in state debate.